Tonight I wanted us, by the grace of God, to speak about what we might call a besetting sin, one that unfortunately all of us commit, some a little and some a great deal. It is the sin known as catechresis, the judging and condemning of others. Today our church celebrates James, the brother of God, who in his epistle writes above all on this very subject of judgment. We, with a light heart as it were, are ready at any moment, without examining anything and often without anyone even asking for our opinion, to judge and to condemn. I am inclined to believe there is no tongue that is not guilty of this sin. Suppose our Christ, like some physician, were to take a spoon in his hand and say to each one of us, "Open your mouth so I can look at your tongue, so I can see how many priests you have devoured, how many bishops, how many neighbors, how many colleagues." Not one tongue will be found unstained by this sin, and yet this sin is not brought to one's confessor. We commit other sins too. We are human. We will fall. We are made of earth. We will sin. But this sin slips by unnoticed. It remains hidden and is not considered a very serious sin. Speaking against another person, especially when that person is absent, for most often these conversations take place while the victim is away. The victim is not there. He does not hear us or see us, and we do not see him either. So I say it would be good for us to discuss this sin tonight so that we may be on our guard, because for many people it has never reached confession. They do not grasp that it is a sin. They may confess something else. I don't know that they held back a drachma belonging to someone, or that they had some other difficult situation with a neighbor, with a business partner, with a mother-in-law, with a son-in-law, with a daughter-in-law, with a brother, a thousand and one other things can come to confession. But this judging, this so-called condemnation, has not reached confession, and it is a most terrible sin. Our Christ does not accept it. He does not want it. Judgment is a matter that belongs to Christ alone. Among themselves, people are fellow defendants. I am accused, and you are accused. Why then should we sit and discuss and accuse one another when both of us are guilty? And yet we pay no heed to this, and at the same time it is an insolent and cowardly sin. If I am bold when the person we are talking about is absent, but cowardly when he is present and we could discuss the matter with him, that is not right. It does us no honor, either as Christians or as human beings. But there it is. You cannot help it. I cannot help it. We cannot help it, even though this tongue has been set behind the teeth, so that when it is about to say something that is not right, or that we might be taught by holding back, it should stay silent. Still it speaks. In the gospel law, our Christ has told us the following, specifically in chapter 7, verse 1 and onward. It is as though he says, "Do not judge, lest you be judged. Do not judge, lest you be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce you will be judged, and with the measure you give it will be measured to you. With whatever measure," he says, "you measure another, you yourself will be measured. And with whatever manner and harshness you judge another, you too will be judged one day. If you want to escape being judged, take care. You yourself will show the way. Judge not that you be not judged." Once in a monastery, the story goes, there was a monk who was not very quick about his tasks, and even in the church. When the bell rang for the monks to gather, he would arrive among the last. The others then had come to disapprove of him, yet he foresaw his own death and called them all together. And so he says, "Brothers and fathers, I am about to depart. Give your blessing." When one of them heard this and saw him speaking of death with such calm, untroubled that he would stand before the judged, he said to him, "Are you not afraid that you are dying, you who were practically never on time when the bell rang?" He said, "Listen, my elder, I stand upon an assurance of my Lord, who said, 'Judge not, that you be not judged.' I took care in my life never to judge anyone. This is the label I take, and I go to meet him, as though to say to him, 'Woe betide you. you who take upon yourself even Christ's own judgment, and now arrange where I am supposed to go. It is a very bad thing, a very egotistical thing, to judge another, very egotistical. And especially as many say, the way he is going, he will end in hell. The way he is going, he will be lost. Who are you, or who am I, to know whether he will be condemned to hell, or to be sure that you and I will not be? A human being can change. How do you know what will happen tomorrow? He may repent. How do you know whether there is something else in his life, or whether there are mitigating circumstances in the eyes of God? Who appointed you as judge? Who appointed me as judge? Generally speaking, this is a terrible thing. And the worst of it is that the person who speaks against another is full of ego. Christ does not tolerate the egotistical. Egoism is a product of Lucifer. To presume that you have the right to sit there discussing this person and that person, that is egoism. A person should keep his own coffin before his eyes, not someone else's. When there is a coffin in your own house, you do not go to drag the coffin out of another person's house. But we imagine that our own affairs are in order, and that we are guilty of nothing. And that is precisely why we sit there and tear the other person to pieces. Indeed, we sit there and discuss in cold blood, at the expense of our absent brothers. The holy Augustine, as he is called, in the house where he received guests, had written on the plaster all around, "Brother, if you have come here to tear apart bones and flesh, to tear apart the flesh of your absent brother, you have no place here. If you came here to devour people," and many people ask and say, "So I am sinning when I speak, not lies, the truth. What we are discussing is the truth. If it were a lie, you would be a slanderer. But now that it is the truth, you are a judge and a condemner. In the one case, you deserve death, and in the other, you deserve execution." A person has no right to judge. Judgment belongs to Christ. Nor can a person judge rightly, because he does not know all the sides of the matter. A person always sits and listens, and many times he is a manufactured witness for the defense of a case that is entirely false. You know, many people go so far as to swear even on the Holy Gospel on behalf of someone when they don't know the other side of the story at all. There is a woman who wants to get a divorce, to leave her husband and take up with another man. And every day she sits there, drumming it into your head. "He did this to me, and he did that to me, and then he did something else, and something else besides. The next day it is, he did this to me, and that, and something else too. And now you become a witness for the prosecution. Then tomorrow you are called into court, and you launch into your Mr. Zambanos act. Do you know what she suffered? Ask me, Mr. President. I was with her every day, and I knew how he treated her, how he put her through hell. Yet you do not even know the other man by sight." These are the so-called manufactured witnesses who go and accuse and judge and condemn. That is, when you go up as a witness, you tell the judge, "Condemn him, I know, and you must condemn him." You want him to rule for one side, when the right of it is completely the opposite. A man doesn't know how things stand, or what lies behind each case. It is better for him to stay off to the side and beg God to protect him. David said, "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth and a door of enclosure round about my lips. If there were a way to be without a tongue rather than to have a tongue, which is a good thing as you know, and what a good thing the tongue is when it is used well. But if it is used badly, it is better not to have a tongue at all. Better to be without it, just as it would be better to be without eyes. So I don't know where each of you stands with this commandment, 'Judge not, lest you be judged.' I don't know, I say again, what state you're in regarding this point. I would wish that you not be guilty of it, but I see how hard a thing it is for a man to guard himself. We will stand on that day with many things on us. We have accused people. We have stained reputations, we have wronged people, we have done great damage in our lives, and let us beg Christ to remind us where we have done that damage, so that, if possible, We can confess it, repent of it, and ask forgiveness even for the things we don't yet remember, so as to confess those too. Because it is poison in the life of a Christian, guard yourselves as much as you can. Get away from people who never shut their mouths. Don't consent to listen to accusations against people who aren't present. One comes to tell you something against her mother-in-law. Another comes to speak against her daughter-in-law, another against his own child. Please, these are your family matters. I don't want to hear them. It is a shame to carry these things outside your house. Besides, there is nothing I can do to benefit you. I can neither tell you you're right nor tell you you're wrong. I am not God. This judgment you bring me, for me to judge and vindicate you, is not mine to give. I am a man. People who take up and carry around the affairs of those who aren't present, these people must not be allowed into the house. These people must not be allowed in. St. Basil the Great says that a man is equally guilty, both the one who speaks and the one who listens. Because some people say, I didn't say anything, she said it. You only listen. You could have stopped it from the very first moment so that nothing was said. Please, do you want us to sit and talk about something of our own? Let's talk. But to talk about someone who isn't here, no. Now there is an instructive piece of conduct, as they tell it, of Napoleon. Once a lady went, furious and in tears, straight to the king and began to speak against her husband. He sat her down at the table and leaned his head on his right hand. He covered his right ear with his hand and sat there and let her go on. I don't know how long, and he listened to her. At one point she stops and says, Your Majesty, does your ear hurt? Forgive me for tiring you so long, but my matter is a serious one. No, he says, my ear doesn't hurt, but I see, he says, that you've covered it and you keep it in that position. Yes, I'm keeping this one untouched, he says. I'm listening to you with this one. This other one I'm keeping to hear your husband too. I'll summon your husband as well, to hear him also, so that I can judge. Do you understand? He didn't rush to tell her. Yes, you're right, and so on. Truly, what a scoundrel to do such things to you. I'll help you. No, this one, he says, I keep untouched. I won't let anything in, not a single word of yours. Let me call your husband, too, to hear him with this ear, so that I can draw my conclusion. Many times we have passed on words that were lies, and afterward found ourselves shamed, and had to ask people's forgiveness, because we were dragged along by other cunning and wicked people, and we believed, or even put our names to, matters in which the people were innocent. Besides, when a person has fallen into something, why do you go and pile on with your tongue and give him the finishing blow? You can lift him up, you can pray to God for this person, you can entreat the most holy Theotokos for this person, for something he did, for something that happened, for something he suffered, for something he failed to notice. That is good. But instead, you discuss him with other people, and you tell someone, listen, whatever we have said here stays here. This is just between us. Well, if it was supposed to remain between you, why did you mention it to him? He will tell someone else, saying, you know we talked about this and that, but keep it between us. I don't want to. Just leave it. Then that person will tell another and say the same thing. You know, this is just between us. Do you know what I heard? And so the story spreads. It is like pouring water into a cracked pitcher. It simply leaks away. If you did not have the strength to keep it to yourself, how can you ask me to keep it secret? And how can you turn around afterward and rebuke me? You went and told it. Well, why did you tell me if I wasn't supposed to repeat it? Why did you tell me in the first place? Did you tell me out of love or out of malice toward him? Surely you told me out of malice toward him. If it had been out of love, you would have gone to him instead. You did it out of malice. And if I tell you that 99.99% of Christians are guilty of this very thing, what will you say? And it has never ever reached confession, unless it is some gross case, or unless someone's conscience has grown refined in the Christian life and seeks to discover whether he was ever an accuser. Only such a person will have come to a confessor to say, I accused, I spoke against, and especially against persons we don't even know. Do you remember that lovely classic story of Aristides the Just? Aristides once found himself in the marketplace of Athens, and a vote was being held at the time against Aristides on whether to banish him from there or not. And one man had a potsherd in his hand. He didn't know his letters, and he too had to cast a vote for or against Aristides. He happened upon Aristides himself, whom he didn't recognize, and says, "Write here for me, please, that he should be sent away." And Aristides sent away, why should he be sent away? The man says, the others don't want to keep hearing him, the ones who call him the Just, I don't want to write it for me. And so Aristides wrote his own name, one or two times, on the potsherd, and the man handed it in and voted for Aristides' banishment. Do you know what such people are like? On Saturday, I was at the Petrarchy Monastery for a memorial service. And when I came out with my wife and my sister-in-law, we took a taxi, and the taxi driver says, you people are with those good-for-nothings. Oh, 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 oh. My wife was sitting up front, and she challenges him. How do you know them? Who are these good-for? Nothing, gentlemen. She tells him from in there. Who? Tell me by name, stop, she says. Tell me by name which of the men in here is the good-for-nothing. Who is it that you actually know? Well, he says, the newspapers print it. I read it. And how do you know it isn't the complete opposite? Sometimes the fault lies with the ones doing the writing, not with the people they write about. How can you know? You don't know the one man, and you don't know the other either. How can you open your mouth and label someone like that? The argument that had to take place continued all the way to Pangratti, where we were going. In the end, once we were outside, this man apologized. He said that he too was an old calendarist. After all, I am an old calendarist. Since my wife had already begun speaking, she had managed to speak first. I said to myself, let her receive the reward, and I sat and listened, so that I could understand how people think. Here was a man ready to spew venom, ready to bite people he did not even know. He did not know them at all. Ready to besmirch people, consciences, homes, and so forth. He was ready to do all this. Such conduct is not proper to a Christian. Yet, in order to justify our own misconduct, we dwell on the faults of others, faults which, very often, are not faults at all, but slanders. If a person would read the lives of the saints, he would have much to learn about these very matters. One night a young woman set out alone toward Alexandria. But this young woman had dressed in men's clothing, not for fashion, to show off her figure like the women of today, but for ascetic discipline, for ascesis, and she stopped one night at an inn. There at the inn, the daughter of the innkeeper was corrupted that same night with a soldier, and she became pregnant. Afterward, when the pregnancy was discovered, she laid the blame on the monk who had stayed there without knowing. However, that the monk was not a monk at all, but a nun. The day came, they seized the monk. The monk was guilty. The day came for her to give birth. She is seized by a demon, and so is that young man who had done the harm. They both went mad, and the demon in her confesses that it is not the monk who is guilty, but another, a soldier. And indeed, that was the truth. She gives birth, and afterward she takes the child and cares for it until it had grown. In any case, after that, they drove her out of the monastery. She stayed outside with the child, raised it, and so on. And the end of it was that she died, and they go to prepare the one they called Theodore. Theodore was his name, and they found her to be Theodora. Do you understand what slander can do, what sin can do, how careful a person must be? You know, absolutely nothing about what is really going on. The newspapers have been writing about it these past few days. I am simply using this as an example. It was not necessary, but I will use it. The newspapers write. The girlfriend of the man from Pravisa. Another says, the wife of Michael the iconographer was caught by her husband, and he left her. This woman, they say, is the girlfriend of the man from Pravisa. and people read it. People hand out their verdicts, and there is not a single person to say that things are not so. And what is the truth now? This woman has been abandoned by her husband, because her husband is living unlawfully in Arda with a woman from his village, whom his father had forced on him because she came with a large dowry. Because his wife was a poor girl. The other woman, you understand, lives here in Athens. She is here with the child in her arms, and she wanders the streets in poverty. And he is now living as if unmarried, living unlawfully with the other woman, and has fathered a child in Arda. Yet the journalist writes here that this Michaelis woman was with Prevesus, and that her husband caught her and divorced her. And it is the complete opposite. Of what you see, believe half, and of what you hear, believe nothing. There is a folk saying, you understand, or else you will tear your hair out. You will say to me, should we not take an interest in all these things that happen? We should, but with care and with discernment, and as a Christian, far better to pray than to go hunting and accusing, because you may tear down other people who do not have the strength to stand. If I hear something, even the harshest and most terrible thing, I have the strength to remain steady. But someone else may be vulnerable and may fall because of what you say, because you did not have the discernment to keep your mouth shut, and often it is a lie. But even if what you discuss is true, you must know that if that person falls because he is weak and cannot remain standing, you will find him hanging around your neck like another pendant. Do you know how many people, through our own carelessness or through our own tongue, have been swallowed up, have been destroyed, have lost their faith, have been shaken? It is necessary, then, for a person to return to himself. If a person paid attention to his own faults and wanted to seek out his own faults and concern himself with them, he would have no room left to discuss the faults of others. Besides, the faults of others do not cover over our own. One of our own ancient sages used to say, whoever takes up the faults of another to cover his own is like a man washing himself with mud. For these faults are the other man's mud, filth, and stench. Why do you use them to cover your own? Can mud clean your own mud? It cannot be clean that way. Besides, Christ tells you, do not judge. Hold yourself in. The judgment is mine. I am the judge. Something the harshest, the ugliest, I have the strength to hold myself firm. But the other man is fragile, and he will fall from the very thing you say, you who did not use the discernment to keep your mouth shut. And many times it is a lie. But even if the thing you discuss is true, know this, if he falls because he is weak and cannot stand, you will find him hanging around your neck like another pendant. Do you know how many people, through our own carelessness or through our own tongue, have been swallowed up, have been destroyed, have lost their faith, have been shaken? It is necessary, then, for a person to return to himself. If a person paid attention to his own faults and wanted to seek out his own faults and concern himself with them, he would have no room left to discuss the faults of others. Besides, the faults of others do not cover over our own. One of our own ancient sages used to say, whoever takes up the faults of another to cover his own is like a man washing himself with mud. For these faults are the other man's mud, filth, and stench. Why do you use them to cover your own? Can mud clean your own mud? It cannot be cleaned that way. Besides, Christ tells you, do not judge. Hold yourself in. The judgment is mine. I am the judge. You are not the judge. Once a man died who belonged to a certain group, like the other man I spoke to you about earlier. He too had been condemned by those around him as someone who would go to hell. Of course, we do not know whether he is in hell. No, he died unexpectedly, and they found him dead in the morning. There is a knock at a man's door, and there stands a tall figure, evidently an angel, who says to him, so and so has died, and the Lord has sent me to ask you, where do you see fit for him to place his soul? Are you higher judges than Christ? This man did not even know yet that the other had died in the night. Where do you see fit, he says. Where would you want Christ to place his soul? And if someone had asked me my opinion about some matter, and I had been carried away into discussing it, and had said, this is fine. But many times we ourselves create these discussions. and we ourselves seek out people with whom to speak cold-bloodedly against others. Never get into these discussions, and never accuse anyone. Satan is a craftsman. Satan is cunning, and many times he even drives us to bloodshed, to break up married couples, to make brothers stop speaking to one another, and so on, over things that are not even true. Close your mouth, I don't know. The Lord knows. A man once had the foolishness, unfortunately, to say, I'm not afraid of the devil. That is a serious thing to say. If he had said, with God's help, I'm not afraid of the devil, that would be one thing. But he said, I'm not afraid of the devil. That won't do. So the devil sends him word, I'll put you in the frying pan and make you dance, in a manner of speaking, like a hedgehog. Listen to what he did to him. This man loved his wife very much. He trusted his wife completely, and his wife was very beautiful. One day he had a whitewasher in the house, a man plastering and fixing the house, whitewashing it. What does the devil do? He appears as the wife's cousin, one they hadn't seen for many years. He dips his hands in the lime and knocks on the door, and what do they see? The two of them embracing to kiss and so on, and he leaves behind on her back the print of his palm in lime, one mark and then another. They kissed and the rest of it, and he says, do me the favor, let me go take care of a little errand I have, and I'll come back. We'll eat here at noon. I'll host you, and all the rest. Fine. So the workman leaves and goes off to the shop, posing as a relative. The Ascension. And the devil has his hired hands. Many people are instruments of Satan. They do nothing else. This is the only work they do in life. Woe to the man whom God will not protect, and woe to the man who will not beg God to cut off his tongue. If you are about to let out a word that will do harm, do not rush. Do not open your mouth so easily. We are all sinners, and when a man truly considers that he is a sinner, he no longer has the strength to open his mouth. Let me tell you something of my own here. I'm sorry that I'm forced to speak about myself. It often happens that I'm speaking with certain people who have done such things that one could speak to them harshly and openly. But I swallow my tongue because at the very same moment the thought passes through me. And you, sir, what have you done? In your own life, what have you done? By what right will you judge him and speak about him and let yourself enter into a conversation against him? What have you done yourself? And right there the advance is halted, the appetite for attack and for branding others is cut off, and the matters get talked through this way. God bless us all. I have my own faults, you have yours. You owe 1,000. I owe 100,000. Another owes 1,000,000. Another owes 100. We are all guilty, and so the matter is closed. But we don't think about our own faults, and that makes us hypocrites. That is what Christ tells us. Because there is no man who has no weak spot, who is not guilty, who is not worthy of accusation in the eyes of Christ. So how is it that you, who are guilty in one thing, judge another man in a second thing, while you are guilty in a third, and you judge him in a fourth? By what right? And how is it that you make your own faults small and his faults large? Who appointed you? To draw up this reckoning and to come out on top, declaring that all the others are like this and so on, don't you think you become a bit of a Pharisee? I am not like the rest of men, nor even like this tax collector. That is exactly how it is. Listen to the reasoning of our Christ. Allow me to repeat it. Judge not, he cuts it short, that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. With whatever measure, whatever harshness, whatever manner you judge the other man, whether he is at fault or not, let us grant that he is at fault, you will be judged. With the same measure I will judge you. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. And in whatever way you measure the other man, finding nothing good in him at all, you yourself will be measured. Because a man, a Christian, always takes care to find whatever good the other person has, and to cover over whatever evil the other person has. The worst man has some good in him. There is no man who doesn't have something good, and yet we push aside all the good in good people, just to dig up one bad thing in a man, so that we can gossip about him, and slander him, and drag his name through the mud, whether in family matters, or personal, or this, or that, or anything else. He sees from above. There is an eye that sees and records each one of us. At every moment a kind of cardiogram is being taken of each person, of how he thinks, and how he speaks, and what he says with each word, and why he said each word, what he had to gain by it, what comes out of it. And he goes on and says, And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? You see, he says, something like a toothpick in another person's life, and you go and accuse him, pointing it out and saying such things to him, while all the time you yourself have a beam within you, a whole rafter in your eye. Hypocrite, you have faults of your own, yet you see the other person's toothpick and fail to see your own beam. For you know, there is a vicious circle. I accuse that neighborhood, that family, and they accuse me. I accuse the others, and everyone accuses me. This vicious circle takes shape, and Christ wants to remove it from our midst, to put this malice to death. Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, Let me cast out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye. Besides, he says, if you do not cleanse yourself rightly and well, how is it possible for you to see such a tiny little thing inside the other man, that small speck? Because this is how God arranges it. The other man's sin is 70 denarii, 100 denarii, 70 drachmas, but your sin of judging before God is 10,000 talents, 6 million in pre-war money. So how will you who are so deeply in debt before God say that this man is a sinner, that he did this, that a priest did that, a governor did that, a neighbor did that, the mayor did that? How will you say it, he says, when at every moment you carry a beam before the eyes of God, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye. Set yourself right in every direction, so that you can stand before the justice of God, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. Once you have cleansed yourself, he says, if it is even possible for a man to be cleansed to that degree, then you will be able to discern even the toothpick in another person's eye. But we make light of our own faults. They are nothing. The faults of others, however, we magnify and make enormous. This is the work of the devil. The devil is an optician. He puts on us whatever glasses he wants. He makes us unable to see our own faults, so that we will not correct ourselves, while magnifying the faults of others. Do you remember what we used to learn in the old Christomathia reader? I remember it from the secondary school we attended then. It said that a man carries two pouches, one in front and the other behind. He carries two hanging sacks, two bags. In the one in front, he has placed everyone else, while he has put himself in the one behind. He doesn't see himself, but the others see him, they see his own self plainly. This he doesn't consider. A man simply doesn't think about this. And for this very reason, go to the coffee house, go to the neighborhood, go to the square, go to the playground, go wherever you like, but go even inside the church as well. You will find people there gnawing away at the good name of others, and of people who are absent. Unfortunately, that is how it is. So what is this God to see? And how is this God to judge us? He will judge us harshly, very harshly. So there is work needed upon ourselves, of course, over the eyes, and the hands, and the ears, the tongue, and so on. These are good things given by God, but they remain good and are reckoned good only in proportion to how they are used. Sometimes they become evil instruments without being at fault themselves. This tongue, for instance, in itself, is like a piece of flesh, a bit of skin inside the mouth. Even though it is a mysterious thing and a great gift from God, in itself it is neither good nor evil. According to the use that the master makes of it, it becomes good or it becomes evil. Sometimes a mother says, I'll cut that tongue of yours out. And what good would it do afterwards to cut off his tongue, or rather to change the violinist inside him. The tongue is a violin, and it is played by the violinist, which is the human being. Let us smash the violin because I misuse it, because I do not know how to play it. It is not the violin's fault, it is the violinist's fault. So it is with the tongue, it is in the hands of the violinist, the human being, and it gets used to pour out poison wherever it stands, to stain, as I told you, people's situations and reputations and so on. It is not the human tongue that is at fault. The tongue is like money. Money is neither good nor bad. It becomes good if it is used well for the needs of people, and it becomes bad when it is used for the destruction of people, and even of the one who possesses it. So it is with the tongue in proportion to how it is used. The commandment is on the basis of David, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name." So I am obliged to praise the Lord. But the tenant inside, the human being, being wicked, uses the tongue not to praise the Lord, but to blaspheme the Lord. Do you want a simple example? The young man has left, the husband has left, he goes off to work at his job. At home there remain the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law and the little children. The mother-in-law was not satisfied with the daughter-in-law, and worn out she said a word to her. The wife with the children had to do the shopping and the rest. She did not have things perfect, the way the mother-in-law used to keep them with her own hands in the old days. And the mother-in-law said a word to her, let us say then, when the husband comes home at midday, "Mother, how was your day?" A long face then, showing that something has happened. "I see you are upset." And instead of saying if the husband had learned from elsewhere, learned from her child that his mother was upset today, instead of saying, "My child, you ask me how. Look after your wife and your children. I heard that Katina, his wife, for example, said a word to you." Well, what of it? She is a tired woman, hard-pressed. She has children. She runs about. She works. If she even says a word to me, has the world come to an end? Go to your work. Glory to God. We had a good day. She could not say it. She could say it, but perhaps the poor woman there, I do not know what she said. Even if she said something else, the mother-in-law took it differently. And so she piles on the whipped cream as well, and adds the creams too, and serves it up, and the most holy Theotokos begin, and the Christ begins, and it begins, you know. I have only one mother, and I can take another wife, but I cannot get another mother, and so on. That evil little box did all of it. Do you understand? Forgive me for putting it so bluntly, but I want to emphasize the point, because that is how it is. I did not come from the moon or from Mars. I live in the midst of this life. I have lived it myself, and I know it. I speak from personal experience, I tell you. Could she not have overlooked it? Even if we accept that this really happened, she could have. But her malice would not allow her to. She did not use her tongue as she should have. The wisdom of Sirach in the Old Testament gives a beautiful example. Pay attention to it. When one person says something harsh to another, as I was saying earlier, the daughter-in-law said something to her mother-in-law. The days when you used to do such things are gone. I do not know exactly how she put it, but she said it. Sirach says that when such a word leaves someone's mouth, it might just as easily leave the mother-in-law's mouth as well. And by noon the husband might hear about it from his wife. Your mother and so on made a sign at me and this and that, whereas again they could have led you, "Well, grandmother, let her say a word. You never know where we will find ourselves tomorrow. We may be worse off than this. Go to your work, my husband." She too could have said it. She could have. And so it goes one way or it goes another. So then, when such a word leaves the mouth, bitter, from wherever it comes, it is, he says, as if a burning coal had left it. Has it never happened to you that you go to? If you go to burn incense indoors and the charcoal bursts and spills onto the floor, what do? You run to find it. Where is the charcoal? It fell somewhere on the floor, and there is a danger of fire. Is that not so? It is, prove me wrong. So, he says. That piece of charcoal which flew away and could possibly start a fire can also be put out. But if you blow on the charcoal and pile wood on top of it, He says, it will become a raging fire. But if you spit it out, it will go out. Out of my own mouth, and rightly so. Then you will not be forgiven by God. Yes, that is how things stand. We could have prevented many things, many situations. The tongue itself is not to blame. The tongue was given to us by God, so that God may be glorified, so that God's honor may be upheld, so that people may be protected and comforted, so that they may help and understand one another. That is why the tongue was given. It was not given to judge and condemn, pouring out poison like a sprinkler from morning until night. Perhaps you are not among those foolish people who accuse others, but you may be among those who listen to them. Be on your guard. Be on your guard. When you get up and leave the place where they are accusing, as I said earlier, they will be talking to the wall. They will be gnawing at themselves. They want a person. The devil wants a partner. He wants to initiate others as well into this accusing and into this destruction. Passing judgment on others is a grave sin, and it becomes especially grave, I repeat, because it remains unconfessed. It never occurred to us to ask forgiveness, not once. I myself often spoke against Father Augustino's, that is, I do not agree with the extremes to which he goes. And many times as I spoke, my conscience reproved me. Even though I was speaking the truth and was prepared to defend what I said, my conscience still reproved me. And besides confessing it, I kept asking to meet him so that I could personally ask his forgiveness. God arranged it, and I met him in Arasos, at a hotel that had been rented for the occasion. And I asked permission to go and make a prostration before him. I said to him, you know how highly I regard you, so forgive me and give me your blessing. We may disagree, but forgive me. All right, he said. May you be blessed. We simply disagree, you know. But I feel within me that I must ask him personally, if possible, for my forgiveness. Why did he set it right? It is a sin against God, and a sin against one's neighbor. I did not curse the man. I judged him. I simply said, I disagree, I do not agree, and I proved for what reason I do not agree. Yet this, to a certain degree, we do not know where it is legitimate concern and where it is catacrisis, judging. For this very reason, it is good to bar it at the mouth and to let the other person speak instead, because it is before his own Lord that he stands or falls. It is none of my business. So it is a delicate thing, this, which before I observe it, and we are all too ready to sit down loaded with our baskets, to discuss so and so and so and so, and even to dig up the dead and discuss them, in the marketplace, in the street, and so on, as if nothing were happening, and then to go home and eat olive oil or bean soup for our 40-day fasts, after we have devoured people. We have devoured the dead and the living. Then we go and eat food cooked with oil or bean soup, because it is Lent. This is a delusion, and I want to draw your attention to this point. These are not blessed words, they are cursed words. James, the brother of the Lord, whose feast we celebrate today, says pointedly in the first chapter concerning such corrupt words, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. Let no evil word come out of your mouth. And Paul to the Romans says, who are you to judge another man's servant? Does he not have a master? Does he not have the Lord? Who are you to judge him whether he did well or did not do well? Who called you to set yourself up as his examiner? For God, as St. Gregory the Nazianzen says, nothing is so sweet to people as condemning the faults of others. There is nothing sweeter, he says, than listening to someone being accused, hearing people talk about a nun, about a bishop, about a young woman, about a widow, about I do not know whom. There is nothing sweeter, he says, and this is true. You hang on every word, so as not to miss a single syllable. Nothing is so pleasing to people as condemning the affairs of others, talking about other people. And St. John Chrysostom says, judging wherever it is brought in has overturned souls and dragged them down. It overturned souls that were standing well, and it bound them, sank them, and they were lost to hell, this judging did, and Matthew says what I already told you. By your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. You found words to cover him, to shield this one and that one and the other, and to say, who knows? Who knows where I myself will be tomorrow? Let us instead pray to God to shelter that family too, and that young woman, and that priest, and that nun, and that lady, and that gentleman who has taken this road. This is what God wants, not judging. Therefore you are without excuse, O man, whoever you are who judge, for in judging another you condemn yourself. Every time you judge another person, he says, you condemn yourself, for God will call you to account. Therefore, as John Chrysostom again says, let us not become harsh judges of others, lest we ourselves be required to give a strict account. Let us not be harsh judges of others, because God will also call us to account. And if that which David says should be applied, if you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who shall stand? Who can stand when Christ sets up his scales? And when Christ takes up his measure to judge a man, who can stand before him? And yet I have the boldness to discuss and to condemn so lightly people whom I do not even know by sight, not in the least. Whether he is a politician or a military man, or I don't know, a clergyman or a layman, whoever he is, I don't know what he is. Leave me in my sins. Leave me in my own condition, my child. This is the answer. Forgive me both for the manner and for the tone in which I have spoken. But hold on to this. I pray that you are not among this category, and that you are not answerable for this sin, and that I alone, who am speaking at this hour, may be the one held answerable. Because I believe that even at this hour, as I speak, I must again make my confession. Therefore I pray together with you, may the Lord have mercy on us and bless us. If we have fallen, may we rise up in repentance and confession. If we are standing, may he help us not to fall. Amen.